lots of ideas how you can change the world. Some people think changing the world can only be done by the smartest person in the world. Just put them in a room, let them figure it out. Some people see the bad in the world and they just decide to ignore it. But that won't help anything.
Welcome to the Objective Secure Podcast. My name's Mike.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And this is episode 23, Great Expectations Part 2. So if you've listened to the last episode, you know that we have been talking about the rights and responsibilities of players and TOs and what you can expect from events. And like usual, the topic got a bit out of hand and here we are with the second part of the episode. Unlike last couple of double episodes we've done where we've kind of just recorded the whole thing back to back to back and had a bridging intro, we decided for this one that since we had an event in between the two episodes, that we would kind of expand on what happened at the event as part of this intro and then lead straight back into the topic. So, we had our third annual Mixed Doubles Warhammer 40,000 event happen on Saturday, the
28th of July. 28th, yeah.
We had 68 players, so 34 teams of two. And what was really exciting for me is there were so many new faces in the room this year.
There were a lot of new faces. I'd say probably 50% of the players in the room we didn't recognise. And that's because we haven't met them, not because we didn't recognise them.
I wouldn't have said it was that high, but there were certainly a huge number of faces in the room that, I didn't recognise from past events. We had a whole bunch of new players come along. We had, I think it was 8 women as part of the event.
We had seven women playing and one unofficial coach who also stepped in and played for a little bit.
Yeah, she ended up playing at one point there. So that was really exciting to have over 10% of the room women in and playing and enjoying the day.
Hmm.
And from those conversations...
And 50% of the TOs were females, so you know.
For 50% of the day?
No, 75% of the day.
Unfortunately, yeah, Emma didn't get to be there for the finale and be part of the photos that we took, particularly with the women.
Hmm.
She had another engagement to go to, so...
Actually, it was a wedding, not an engagement.
So I ended up running solo for the afternoon, which I think it's important to point out that you get used to certain things in this world, and it really highlighted how much work there is as a TO when you're used to someone else taking up half the slack.
Did it highlight how much work I actually do and how much you don't?
Bugger off.
Sweet, I should be away more often.
Can't take a compliment. So we ran... probably about 15 minutes behind most of the day. We had a couple of players late turning up because they went to the wrong venue, which kind of pushed us back a little bit. And every time I thought we'd clawed it back, we didn't. So, we had a full-on day, 4 games, 1,500 points a team, so 750 a player. If you want to check out the players pack, I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes so that you can go and see exactly what the formats were for list building and what the missions were. It was.
I'm actually halfway through writing a blog post about this very event, and I've got a stack of photos of the actual armies and the games in progress as well. So I'll have those up. I'm intending to get those up tomorrow.
Well, hopefully.
The photos at least. I'm not sure about finishing the blog post.
If you're listening to this in the future, you can obviously go back to August.
It's August today.
2018. You'll be able to find the link with all the photos and stuff from the day. We had a good mix of armies. We were using Down Under pairings again. So if you want to check out the results, you can head on over to downunderpairings.com. The results are all saved there as well. What was interesting about it is this is an event that I had some of the experienced tournament goers kind of questioning the mission format across the day, partly because they didn't bother reading the missions, partly because they were essentially just rulebook missions. They were very straightforward. They were all out of chapter approved 2017, 2 Maelstrom and 2 Eternal War.
And they were actually all in Down Under pairings as well.
Yes.
So we had a few people going, but I didn't bring my chapter approved. No, that's why we loaded them into Down Under pairings. You just push the little icon and it takes you to what you need to see.
Yeah, that was a really good experiment. I hadn't put in a lot of information in there before manually. There's a few default settings that you can pick, but I loaded the deployment maps and references and that sort of stuff. And now I know what it can and can't do. I'll certainly be loading more information next time to make it as user-friendly as possible.
And part of the reason that we did that is to cut down on time that you needed to, you know, keep picking up the book and going to the right page and checking it out. It was literally right there at your fingertips.
Yeah.
Except for the poor player that's still using a flip phone.
There were a couple in the room with no smartphones, yeah. Which was bizarre to me in 2018.
Do you know what I found really interesting was that one of the people that still had a flip phone is just about to turn 18. And I don't know, I just expect people who are just about to turn 18 to have...
smartphones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I expect people who are just about to turn 68 to still have a flip phone. No judgment. It's just that's purely, you know, it was about, that's about me, not about anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, so we had 34 teams play it out. They played the four missions. And the reason I was kind of getting to that topic was we picked those missions. Oh, actually, to tell the truth, my five-year-old picked those missions. She rolled a dice for the Eternal or Maelstrom. She rolled a dice out of the six missions available, and then she rolled a dice for deployment. So the five-year-old picked the missions. But the point of picking so simple missions for this event was around making it as close to standard 40K as possible, with a few little tweaks to obviously make it work for doubles and whatnot, so that the new players were familiar with what they were looking at and what they were dealing with, instead mm-hmm. of having to rely on complex missions where you have Eternal War plus Maelstrom plus kill points plus tertiary objectives plus this plus that. I wanted to make sure that the missions we gave them were familiar, I suppose. Even if it wasn't a mission they played before, at least the format was very, very familiar. So I think that worked reasonably well. The last game in the day was the one that probably got the most, I got the most flack for, because it was quite a complex mission. And when I wrote the players pack, I, in my head, thought I'd made it clear, but clearly I hadn't made it as clear as I thought I had. And after going into game four of a one-day tournament, I think everyone was a bit tired and a bit sort of, I don't know, their head was a bit full.
Yeah.
So there's a good piece of feedback there for us to make sure that the most complex of the missions doesn't go on the last, you know, game two or game three probably would have been ideal.
Yeah, probably game two would be good.
Yeah. So we had... the overall winner of the event had to be a mixed couple,
mm-hmm.
As per the last couple of years. And whether that...
And that had to be a mixed gender couple.
Yes. Whether that stays going forward with the growth of the event, who knows? But for this year, it did. And we had Travis and Eloise win it for the second year. Not the second year in a row.
Eloise wouldn't play last year,
no.
But Travis brought his dad, so we had mixed generation there.
Yeah. So, they took it away for the second time in 3 years, which is awesome. Ollie and Tom took it away for the second, might even be
no, third.
It is third year in a row for the open category. And then we had a lovely couple take away sportsmanship and a long-time painting hobbyist take out painting. So nice broad mix of people. We'll have some photos in the show notes as well, so you can see all the winners. And we'll obviously have photos of the armies, like Emma said, in the blog post that goes along with this episode. I think the event went reasonably well. I think everyone had a good time. I spoke to all the ladies and, you know, everyone was very positive that they'd want to come back and play potentially singles events going forward, which is great to hear.
Yeah, it was interesting because this is the most females that we've had, and having, did we say seven female players?
Yeah.
In the room doesn't sound like a huge amount, but when we first started Masters, we had one female player, Glenn, was there. And, you know, and so it was from that we decided we wanted to do things to make females feel more comfortable coming into the gaming tournament environment.
Yeah.
And we had, I can't remember how many we had for the first.
I think it was only about four doubles. The first year.
What's
funny is, though, we were missing two or three.
That's where I was going with it,
yeah.
So Ghislaine couldn't play because she was working. Alison couldn't play because she literally just had a baby.
Yeah.
I can't remember who else we had who played doubles who wasn't able to be there. But, you know, there was... So what I'm trying to get at is our female player base is actually increasing.
Yeah.
So it's really quite exciting.
Well, we had... we had... I think it was seven, eight technically. And I know that there were regulars who have been to our events in the past that weren't there. So,
yeah.
You know, if everyone was available, then we could have easily had double digits for women playing, which is
amazing.
Yeah, we're going to
aim for that for next year.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll start seeing some of those doubles players start coming to singles.
Hmm. And we are seeing that.
Yeah, I think the confidence boost of not being treated differently. And I think it was a bit weird for some of the ladies because they were being treated like the other, like anyone else in the room. And I think that was sort of almost worked to our detriment at one point there because the guys were treating them like other tournament goers.
So you and I have a different opinion on this because this is billed as more of a friendly hobby style tournament.
Yeah.
And I think that what the ladies were saying was that it felt too competitive. Now that, I understand that you're saying that that's a compliment in that the guys were being as competitive with them as they were being with any of the other guys in the room. But to me, you kind of go, well, what's the purpose? What's the intent? Are they being too competitive or are the women's expectations off here? And I think that's what you and I probably need to have a chat about.
Look, I think the...
maybe like, not on air, but you know.
No, but but I think the... Like, we didn't have any complaints about behaviour, any complaints about, like, inappropriate language or behaviour or anything like that. So I'd like to think that the guys in the room treated them with, you know, respect and like
I
they would anyone else.
Yeah, and I've always said that I feel 100% safe walking into a room with 100 of those guys. They are lovely and respectful and kind. And one of the reasons that I love what we do is because I see all the time these guys modeling that positive behavior towards women and towards each other. And, you know, and we don't get enough of that. There are so many people who don't have good male role models and they come to a room with so many good male role models who are modelling that respect. So I don't ever think that that was going to be an issue. Like I say, I think it's to do with expectations. And maybe, I know that was an issue that came up after First Blood as well, and maybe we need to do a better job of setting expectations for that.
Okay. Yeah, you know, that's fair enough.
He just wants me to stop talking.
No, look, I mean, like you said, it's a long, lengthy conversation that needs to, you know, we need to look at how we're delivering the message to the players, and that's something that we need to look at for players' packs and yeah, how we promote the events.
And probably not something that we can fit in a 10-minute intro that we've already gone over.
Look, and on the topic of responsibilities, why don't we move on now into the main topic for the episode today, which was recorded back-to-back with the rights episode, which was episode 22. You can go back and listen to that first, and that'll help some of this conversation make a bit more sense as well. So we're going to talk about the responsibilities of TOs and players at events. So following off the back of episode 22, we're going to talk about responsibilities today.
Hmm.
We covered rights in episode 22, if you want to go back and check that out. And we mentioned at the end of the topic that we're actually going to separate this out into two episodes. So here we are to wrap up that sort of thought, I suppose.
Yeah, so the previous episode, I guess, was around the rights of players and what they can expect going into an event. This episode is more around the responsibilities of the players. So what they're responsible for to actually make events run well.
Yeah, exactly. So again, we've got our little list here that Emma's sourced out of our Bill of Rights.
Okay, no, I'm going to be honest. This particular part isn't part of our Bill of Rights yet.
It will be.
I stole this from my work's rights and responsibilities and I've just edited it
slightly. Since you're the boss, that's fine.
That's it. I wrote them. I just wrote them in a different context.
Oh, that's fine. These will be going in and updating that Bill of Rights document, hopefully by the time you hear this.
Yeah. And actually, before I get started, so with updating the Bill of Rights, I really do want to update around the responsibilities for sportsmanship and sportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah.
So if anybody has anything around that, what, you know, what sportsmanship means to you or a nice way to define sportsmanship. And I think that we did cover that in the last episode around that being respectful to other players and winning with grace and losing with grace. I think that we probably need something a little bit different than what is always my go-to with that, which is don't be a dick.
Yeah.
So, which I do start all events by sharing that with people, but I think possibly I want this printing up to go on a banner. So I think a banner in the a Southern Hemisphere Open event that says, be a sportsman, don't be a dick, is possibly not going to be okay.
Well, I'm just imagining you putting that up in font size 500 on like these big 8-foot banners. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's what I was going with. Yeah. So
all right, let's move on.
Okay, moving on. So, players have a responsibility too. Be respectful of others, including staff, volunteers, players, spectators, and others.
So, do unto others as you would do unto they would do unto you.
Yeah.
Really, that's what we're talking about. It's,
well, if, I don't know it's necessarily that. I just think it's about...
It's treating people like you want to be treated. It's treating them with respect and respecting their personal space. And you know, if you don't know them, don't use crass language and all those sorts of things. Like if you find the defensive, don't do it. And understanding that people's values are different and their expectations might be different. Religions and nationalities can take things differently. The don't be a dick covers that really well, to be honest.
I think it covers all of them, but you know, just trying to break that up and define what don't be a dick
means. Turn it into a 45-minute topic as opposed to a 3-minute one.
Yeah, that's it. World's shortest podcast. Be respectful of OBSEC property and the property of other people.
So this is we actually don't have too many issues in terms of models from people's armies. We get the odd one left behind that no one ever claims, despite what we try and do.
Mm. I did find that at the last event where I did it as like a little modelling kind of over the PA, where that particular player was modelling the spring season of, you know, that people suddenly started listening and came and collected them. But otherwise, no, we don't.
No. When you're packing terrain up, you know, we really appreciate the help when it comes to packing up the terrain.
With this. Part of being respectful of OBSEC property, we really, really appreciate people helping us pack up terrain. But if you could pack it up carefully rather than just opening the tub and chucking it in there, I would really appreciate that.
Yeah, and certainly when we're borrowing terrain from the other clubs as well, we want to make sure that when we borrow stuff from other people and clubs, we return it in a manner that
that we borrowed it, if not better.
So we do, we go through things and try and repair them. If breakages happen during the day by accident, like if your shirt gets caught and you knock a piece of terrain off the table, that's fine.
Yeah, because as we covered in the last episode, I am awesome with super glue and we've always got some with us and we can fix it on the go.
Mm.
Of course, I may then end up being a part of the piece of terrain if my fingers get stuck to it, but I'm an awesome line of sight blocker.
So if you accidentally break something, that's fine. It comes down to not chucking things around and... Yeah, you know, not picking up your opponent's models without their permission, and
obviously no flipping tables.
Yes, definitely no flipping tables. It's too expensive. Mm. I think that's again, if you don't want your models treated that way, don't treat other people's models that way.
And things like being really mindful where you put your drinks, and being mindful when if you're popping down a codex or a rule book. Just being careful where you put that so you don't accidentally put it on top of people's models that have
died
off the table.
If a book isn't yours,
don't fold the pages back.
Yeah. Or
be careful how you open it.
I've seen this happen at events before. Throwing dice. When a dice has just betrayed you one too many times and you pick it up and pitch it across the room.
Not to aim for someone's head.
Well, we'd actually prefer you don't do that in general. Yeah. The last thing we want to do is have a cracked window or having you hit someone in the back of the head with it or, having it bounce across a table, knock someone's prize model off the edge of the table or anything like that. I get the need to pitch dice across the room occasionally, but please don't.
I've got a lovely collection of dice up at the TO table. So if you've got one you want to pitch across the room, just come and gently hand it to me.
Yeah,
give it to me as I'm wandering around the room.
We do end up with an inordinate number of dice that get left behind at events over the course of a year. And most of them are just generic dice that you never know were missing from a collection. We do get the odd special one, which always goes into a little special pot of dice.
Hmm.
But
first of all, it goes, we call them out.
We try and find the owner for it.
Yeah, and it goes up on the Facebook page for the lost property and that kind of stuff. But yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, don't pitch dice.
Yeah, be respectful of people's property also means, I guess, don't steal from anybody else.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not guessing. I'm flat out saying don't steal from anybody else.
No, we've had models go walkabout accidentally. Where people have left stuff behind at our events, and like I say, we try and get the owners. And most of the time, we had a librarian sat here for quite some time who he sat on my shelf and I went, okay, well, no one claimed him. It turned out the player in question was one who had left earlier in the piece, straight after the final game, and left him on the table. And it wasn't until he was getting ready for his next tournament that he went, where's my librarian? And then got in touch and said, hey, by any chance, have you guys got? And we did, which is awesome. I've got an Ogryn slab shield sat here that's got a magnet in the back. So clearly there's an Ogryn somewhere without a shield. The player, you know, it's a shield though. It's not a big piece of, you know, it's hard to find the owner for. I think we've got one Katachan jungle trooper.
And we do always post photos of the, like we speak about them at the, I'm always putting it over the PA at events. And we do post them on Facebook and that kind of thing. But I think just talking about it now, what we might do is create like a lost property photo album so people can go and see what we've actually got left over at events so that we can post them and they know where to look.
It's pretty common to have the drink bottles and the occasional jacket or jumper and things left behind as well. So if you've, you know, if you spot something as you're leaving that is sat by itself, pick it up and bring it to us.
Or if you accident, like obviously the rule books are the same.
Yeah.
Codexes are the same. If you get home and realise you've got two of them,
just let us know.
Because accidents happen and people make mistakes.
Yeah, at least this way we can try and get it back to the owner.
Oh, this one's going to be an interesting one. Attend the event in a fit state, not under the influence of drugs and alcohol.
Well, we do support responsible service of alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And any of the events where we do serve alcohol, we always make sure that we keep an eye on you.
Mm.
And it's very rare that we have to do anything in regards to our responsibilities in that regard.
Yeah.
There's only a couple of times where we've ended up taking keys off people.
Mm.
And both those times, those players have been appreciative of that.
Yeah, so it's around making sure that you're drinking. So we do sell alcohol during our events, but what we ask is that your drinking doesn't impact on other people's enjoyment of the day.
Yeah.
So
having a beer over a game with someone is fine.
Yeah.
Getting rowdy and tanked is not.
So I'm a marriage celebrant or marriage officiant as one of my other roles outside of this. And one of the so the legalities is that you can't be inebriated on the wedding day because legally you need to know what you're doing. So basically when I'm explaining that to people, I sort of say there's a difference between having a couple of beers when you're getting ready or having a glass of champagne to not being able to stand up, not being able to walk and not knowing your own name. So those are kind of similar guidelines that we have. You need to be able to stand up. You need to be able to talk to your opponent.
Focus your eyes.
You need to be able to count how many dice you've got. You need to be able to still continue with the game. You need to not be aggressive after drinking.
Yeah.
So you need to be responsible for self so that you're actually still able to participate in the event to the best of your ability.
Yeah, and look, we should also point out that you're not allowed to bring alcohol into the event where we are serving because our liquor license does not allow that.
Nope.
So you can't go and keep a bottle of whiskey in the car and go out and drink from it and then come back in. That'll get you kicked out of the event.
Yes, because the fine is ridiculous.
Significant. So, yeah, that's just a straight up thanks but no thanks.
Yep.
On the topic of illegal substances, yeah, please don't take them at our events. Please don't come under the influence of those drugs and substances.
Okay, so we perhaps have different opinions on this. Illegal substances are illegal and therefore we don't condone
mm-hmm.
those illegal substances. However, we're also not going to randomly drug test anyone who comes along, and you need to be able to participate in the event in the same way that you would if you were, you know, drinking alcohol or smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and I suppose that smoking cigarettes might come down to it. Like, we would ask people not to go outside 15 times in a 90-minute game to have a cigarette. So, but I do know that there are players who both smoke who will go out midway through a game.
Take a smoke each and then come back in. Yeah.
So being respectful of who you're playing with.
And making allowances for that as well on both sides of that fence. If you're a smoker and you're going out for a smoke, understand the fact that you don't want to have your player or your opponent stood there for 10 minutes. Go out, make it as fast as possible and come back in.
Mm.
And if your opponent says, hey, can I move my models you know, within reason, consider allowing them to do that because you don't want to have the game hung up on 15 minutes of you outside.
No.
If you're going to be a minute or two, then by all means, you know, within reason, I think that's fine.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's exactly the same as somebody going to the toilet, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's if you're out there for 15 minutes or, you know, silly times that that'll be an issue.
Hmm.
And if you are not a smoker and your opponent asks and it's, you know, once in the middle of the game, you know, be
aware.
Respectful.
If you say, no, you're not okay with that, if you need to wee at any point, it is completely within your opponent's right to go, I'm sorry, no, we're playing a game. So it goes both ways, doesn't it?
So just, you know, again, a level of common respect.
Yeah. Ask questions of the event game if there's something you don't fully understand. And I've made a note here after this to ask questions in a timely manner.
So I'm not sure what you're trying to get at there, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, well, in that case, I will need to put an asterisk there so I know to expand that when we put it on the website. So what am I getting at there? What I'm getting at is if you're – well, okay, prior to the event, if you have questions around the missions, read the player's pack, see if the answer's there. But if you have any questions around what detachments you can take or anything like that, ask us.
Yeah.
Don't wait until after all the lists have been required or anything like that. Ask us as soon as you possibly can. If you're wondering it, potentially somebody else is as well. And that gives us an opportunity to be able to kind of clarify anything where we might not have been clear or to expand on things that perhaps newer players might not have understood. And we've just gone with, well, people understand what this means and, you know, that inferred knowledge that gamers may have. But it also means during the game, you have a right to ask questions of your opponent. So you have a right to say, what's the difference between that unit and that unit? Or what does that weapon do compared to that weapon? Or can you show me in the rules where it says your model can do this?
Yeah.
So you have a right to actually ask that. But the best time to ask that is during the game.
On the spot.
So if you then still don't understand, ask for further clarification. Now, if you can't get that further clarification from your opponent, this is where you talk to your judge or your TO and you get them to step in. But do that on the spot because we can do something on the spot.
Yeah.
So if you think that your opponent is not reading a rule right and whether that's through misunderstanding of that rule or whether you think that your opponent is deliberately not reading that rule right, if you tell us on the spot, we can come over, we can read it, we can use our previous knowledge in order to make a decision around that and clarify. And whether that's explaining it to players or whether that's actually overruling that, we can do it on the spot. If you come and talk to us about that at the end of that game, there is nothing that we can do.
No, exactly.
About the result that you've just experienced. We can talk to that player and we will talk to that player and, you know, get some clarification, get some clarity on that. But that's not going to help your game.
No, it's not. I think the key takeaway there is, don't be afraid to ask questions. And if someone, you know, if you go, oh, can you show me that in your book? And they produce a printout from an army builder suite, there's no harm in saying, hey, look, have you actually got the rule book rather than the printout? Or if it's a cheat sheet or something that the player themselves has done up as a rules reference, again, you don't have to. Obviously, without being rude, but you can kind of go, no, man, like, have you actually got the codex or the rule book or the army book or whatever reference it needs to come from? There's no harm in asking for the actual rules.
And I think there's two things that come up there. One is to ask respectfully.
Mm-hmm.
So not go, geez, you're talking out, show me where that's written in the book. You know, if you say something like that, you'd put my back up and I would not be.
It just becomes a hostile situation.
That's it. Whereas if you go to somebody, oh, wow, I didn't know that that worked that way. Can you show me where it says that in the book? You know, it's exactly the same question, but it's a very different intent and you're going to get a very different response.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the first thing. But the second thing is if you're the player that somebody's asking you if you can show them in the book, know that that's not them saying you're cheating. Prove it to me or else. It's an opportunity for them to learn and grow as a player.
Yeah. And, you know, there's this... you talk about Games Workshop. Let's move to the other. Malifaux's got hundreds of different combinations of special rules in regards to the way masters interact with their minions. And different minions respond differently with different masters. So if you're facing a Rasputina crew with all her constructs, the way she behaves and they behave around her is different to Ramos and his constructs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and if you then cross masters over and use her constructs with him and vice versa, you end up in this weird situation where you might think you know what they do, but they do something different because of those different interactions. So other times it can be a simple case of you never having played against that army before and it sounds too good to be true, and you just, for your own peace of mind, need to go and make sure that, hey, do you really get to do that? Like, that seems a bit out of left field. That doesn't sound like it belongs in the game. And I'd like to think most of the time a player will show you the rules and you'll go, wow, fair enough. And that's kind of the end of that conversation. Other times it's an opportunity for them to read the rule and go, hey, I don't think you're playing that right. And then that starts a conversation where you both get to learn. They get to learn the rule and you get to understand where potentially you might have gone wrong.
Hmm.
So it all comes down to understanding that there's no, generally there should be no malicious intent there. They should be asking it out of genuine interest and confusion. And it's an opportunity to set the record straight for everyone.
Cool. So now that I've added more to that, does that make sense?
Yes.
Perfect. Now let's see whether I can remember that when I'm adding this to the bill of rights.
Well, you're
going to
be able to listen to this, aren't you?
Oh, God, I don't want to listen to myself talk. Participate in the event to the maximum, sorry, to maximise your benefits. So give me a confused look again because I'm going to add more. So as an example of this, don't spend the whole of the game attached to your mobile phone. Don't spend the whole of the game outside having a cigarette or try and time your toilet breaks for the actual breaks in the game. One of the reasons that we actually have a drinks trolley is for this very reason, so that people aren't having to spend time walking over to the counter to buy the drinks to then walk back again. So if we, you know, bring the drinks around regularly, it's, you know, we're not actually trying to push selling alcohol as much as physically possible. We're actually offering it as a service to try and make it less disruptive for games.
Yeah.
And that was based on feedback that we got for the first event that we ran, and we've just kind of continued doing that, and I've noticed that some of the other events are doing that now as well.
Yeah.
So can you think of any other ways to maximize your participation and benefit in the game?
Let me think. You actually said something earlier and it popped into my head and now it's gone again.
Don't turn up incredibly hungover.
I think that's a given for most events.
Will turn up incredibly hungover.
Yeah, absolutely.
Particularly day two.
I think it's about, this to me means a lot more, it's about engagement.
Yeah.
Is the way I'm reading that. It's a stay engaged with the game.
Mm-hmm.
And your opponent and the situation you are presently in. Don't distract yourself or allow yourself to be distracted by things outside of what you should be doing, because there's a level of respect that's shown to your opponent by staying engaged, despite how badly you're losing or, you know, how awesomely you're winning or anything else. Like turning around and hollering to a mate across the room, hey man, look, this just happened, is fine.
Yeah, and same with taking photos and on your phone to put on Facebook, because it, you know, there's been a couple of times where I've been called over to events because, oh my God, this looks really cool. You've got 300 models against...
Surrounding 12.
Well, 16, but yes, exactly. And it looked really cool. So getting people to come over and have a look at that, it's still about being engaged, whereas I'm losing, I don't really care, there's nothing I can do, I'm going to sit here and flick through Facebook on my phone. It's not being engaged with the game, and it's not showing your opponent respect. It's not being respectful of the event on the whole.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as you say, I think it's maximizing your engagement.
Yeah.
I'll make a little note. So you talk for a minute while I write engagement.
She's got the list, so she expects me to talk. That's typical.
That's tricky for you, isn't it? I know you struggle. Okay, so you have a responsibility to attend the event you've registered for or inform OBSEC of any inability to attend, which we did talk about before.
Yeah, we talked about this last time. It sounds silly, but we also want to make sure that you're actually okay.
Yeah, definitely.
I know that...
You become part of our family.
Well, I mean, a lot
I'm
of
not
you...
buying you a Christmas present, but...
or a birthday present, yeah. Or any other thing like that, unless you win a tournament.
I'm not buying them a Christmas present, even if they win a tournament.
No, it comes down to us wanting to make sure that everyone is actually okay.
Because yeah, we care.
You know, there's no duty of care there for us. If you buy a ticket and don't rock up, well, that's on you. But at the same time, we want to make sure that nothing untoward has happened where you're not, you know, your car's broken down, you're stuck on the side of the road or worse. So that if we can in any way help If you're stranded somewhere or something's happened, then, you know, we want to try and at least alert the appropriate people.
Hmm.
So, yeah, like, let us know if you're not going to be there.
Yep.
Somehow. Like, ideally via phone or text message at the very least.
Well, I guess ideally, if you're not coming, let us know 24, 48 hours in advance so we can organise a ringer for that place. But if at the last minute you're not going to be there the morning of, then call us on the mobile.
Yeah, absolutely.
But as much notice as physically possible is obviously better. And yeah, rather than just not rocking up.
Yeah, definitely.
This is an odd one, and it is in here because of my work, but whether or not it stays in here is a responsibility, I don't know. So we've got responsibility to pay any costs incurred for the treatment or transport in a medical emergency. In a medical emergency, we will call an ambulance.
I actually think it's relevant. I mean,
it is relevant. It just sort of doesn't fit.
No. look, there have been situations in the past here in Perth where we've had players collapse at events.
Not at any of ours.
Not at any of ours.
If we could keep that going, that'd be awesome.
I know the boys at Crags had it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they did end up having to call an ambulance from memory because the player in question literally just had a seizure.
Yeah.
Collapsed and, you know, had to be medically managed and looked after.
Mm-hmm.
And while ambulances can be expensive, your life is way more valuable than whatever an ambulance is going to cost. So understanding that...
Not that we have any affiliation whatsoever, but it's really worthwhile getting a St. John's membership if you don't already have it.
Or private health if you've got it.
Yeah. That's like $80 for ambulance cover.
Yeah. I mean, we've got a basic first aid kit, and a lot of the time we have players in the room who have their first aid certificates. Emma has her first aid qualifications as well.
We've got ambos who come along. We've got doctors who come along as attendees as well. But
we can't expect players to do that.
Yeah.
So our first port of call will be to dial 000 here in Australia and call an ambulance. Mm. So understanding that if we do that, it's on you to take care of that after the event.
So the best thing that you can do
is not have it happen.
Not collapse.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. But actually saying that, if you do have any medical or health issues that may lead to that happening,
let us know.
Because if we do have to call an ambulance, obviously it's going
to
be useful
for us
if we know that you're epileptic or diabetic or, you know,
you
need to have soft intubation or anything like that.
Yeah, we've got a friend who used to game with us regularly, is diabetic. And there was one night we were out playing and his eyes started glazing over and he couldn't quite focus. And, you know, we didn't quite, or I didn't at the time, kind of put it all together until after the fact when we filled him full of sugar. But yeah, like those sorts of things, if you can let us know in advance so that your opponents, like we can obviously...
Well, we can know if anything happens.
Yeah, you know, not freak your opponents out.
And last one on the list, unless you can think of anything else in a minute, is to stay for the whole event.
This is a hard one because I've seen this happen mainly when I've been international. It doesn't happen so much in Australia that I've seen. Although, having said that, I know on the East Coast, some of the two-day events can make the start of day two a bit groggy. When you pay for an event, we assume that you're going to be there for the whole event. Now, whether that's one day, 2 days, you know, in some of the international cases, 3 days,
mm-hmm.
It's what gets planned for, essentially. And as TOs and having seen some of these big events internationally, it's frustrating for us if we end up setting up 50 tables and we only need 48 of them. Because halfway through day one, a bunch of people decide to pull out because they can't win. If you're playing at something like LVO where they set up 300 tables, or London GT where they had a couple hundred tables and then they have a bunch of dropouts, it actually doesn't just impact the TO, it affects all the players that come along.
Yeah,
it affects the whole event.
It's more than... the reason that I put this on the list is more than it being just frustrating. It does actually affect the other players who are in the room in lots of different ways. And I've written about this before, and that, you know, yes, we've got the possibility that we can have a bye for one of the players. So if you drop out and that takes us down to having uneven players, then somebody gets a bye. Now, that goes back to one of the rights of a player, to play as many games as we can fit into a day. That player's paid to play 3 games that day or 5 games that weekend, and they're missing out on a game because you've decided not to come. Or the other, you know, other side to that is that that player is now getting, how many points do they get? Do they get full points for
a
bye?
No, it's not a full points for us. I think it's a 13-7.
I think at one point it was full points. It was at one point, yeah. Okay, so that player's getting 13 points. Does that player deserve 13 points? And which player gets the bye? At one point, I think we were doing the person who was...
It's normally the lowest player in the ranks.
The lowest player. So is that going to artificially inflate that player's score by giving them 13 points? When perhaps if they actually played whoever would have been above them, they might have, say they might have got a draw. So, you know, they're getting extra points. It's, yeah, it affects a lot of people in the room.
Well, it can also affect the overall score. Like, you know, and we understand that medical things happen and family emergencies happen.
And that's very different. If something happens and you, you know, if
you have to leave or can't attend for the rest of the
day. You get gastro between day one and day two, you stay home. We will sort the rest of that stuff out. You know, if you have a kid and your child gets sick, or if a family member gets sick, or your dog has to go to the vet, or, you know, something like that that's beyond your control. That's really different to going, I can't win, so I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
Or I can't win, so I'm going home at lunchtime.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you decide to pull the pin, I'd like to, rather than having someone just go, no, I'm going to leave, I'd rather them actually come and have a conversation with us and explain what the frustration is and actually try and have a dialogue to understand what the issue is. If it's the fact you're not going to win...
Dialogue. Can you say conversation? Sorry, carry on.
Right, moving on. you know, if...
So pretentious. If a you dialogue.
Can, oh, shut up. if you decide that you can't win, so you're going to leave, I think that that's actually to do with your own expectations of the day and the event. So a lot of the time, if you can change your perspective on things and accept the fact that you're not going to win and then move on and just enjoy the games for what they are and finish as best you can... you know, changing your own perception of what's going on is often the easiest way to rectify any concerns you have about playing out the rest of the event. You know, I saw plenty of players leave at international events I've attended because they lost their first two games out of six, so they definitely can't finish to play day three, so why bother playing? I just don't understand that mentality. I lost my first game at LVO in 2017. I was buggered if I was not going to play those other six games. Like, that was just... the five games.
Mm.
There was just never a question in my mind.
Well, no, because you wanted to finish as high as you possibly could, and so you have to attend.
So, I don't know. I think stop and have a think about the actual impacts of what you're doing is, because it affects the TOs, it affects all the results, because if you don't finish, then obviously you get a DNF, which artificially pushes people up in places. It can potentially change matchups, which in turn means
that... Well, that's it. It would change matchups.
You know, if you're in the top 10, but you know you can't win, and you pull the pin and go, no, I'm not playing the last game, well, then all of a sudden that changes the matchups, which means that someone else is getting an artificial boost. You're getting a DNF, so you're getting zero, essentially. So, I don't know.
Yeah, so back to what I was saying with the, you know, the person who's... has the bye is artificially being inflated. Well, the person who would have been playing you is now either playing somebody that's higher up on the ladder or someone that's, you know, quite a bit lower down on the ladder. So it does have implications the whole way through the event. Because I was thinking, okay, well, adding an extra couple of points to the person who's at the bottom is not likely to see them finishing on the podium. But changing that matchup to someone who was perhaps in
if you're in the top
fourth
third,
place.
Yeah. If you're in the top third or, you know, up in the top eight, then yeah, if someone leaves, that will change the results, almost certainly.
But even if you are absolute last place, we still don't want you to leave.
No. I think
even though it's not going to, you know, change the results of the event.
No, by the time we get to the day, if you have to drop out, you know, we accept that. But we want to make sure that you're leaving for the right reasons. We want to have that opportunity to have a chat to you and understand why you feel like...
Chat, that's so much nicer than dialogue.
Oh, Jesus. Let it go. you know, understand what your frustrations are and maybe see if we can alleviate some of those. That becomes your own psychological point of being able to rise above that mental hurdle.
Or being able to use what you learned in the last two games to your benefit and seeing, can you do better in this game than you did in the last couple?
Yeah.
It's around, I guess, your perspective and, like you say, having that that approach to why you're there.
Yeah, and we've talked about this plenty of times. I know I have. It's when you first decide to go to an event, setting that expectation. If you're going to win, just because you can't win shouldn't mean, well, I'm not playing anymore. If you're going to enjoy the day, then that should never be a conversation. But if you're going purely to go, I want to win this event, and then you lose game three and you know that you cannot win the event anymore, dropping out for day two of that event shouldn't be your go-to.
Yeah. So maybe that's another one of the responsibilities, is managing that expectation.
Yeah, and realizing that your goals can change mid-event. If you go, yep, can't win now, lost game.
I just want to win against one elder.
You know, or, you know, something simple like that. Or turning around and going, yep, okay, I can't win now. I now want to finish top five. Hmm. And I want to keep doing what I'm doing and maximize my rank, and being able to reassess your own expectations and your own goals based on new information.
Yeah. And so that's totally my thing. I love goal setting. Goal setting and what kind of opportunities have you got to reach that goal. So we could definitely do a whole podcast episode on that.
Although, maybe you get a guest for that.
Yeah, because you hate it.
Oh, dear. Yeah, we are a little bit polar opposite in some of these things.
I know. Stuff that lights me up. He's like, really? Really?
Making lists. Jesus Christ. Mm. She's the one with all the notes for this episode. I said that earlier.
Yes. She's the one that did all the work.
I'm talking it.
I'm clicking the button and you just accidentally deleted all the last episode.
I did not. It's fine.
We got it back, but still. All right. That's all I've got on my list. Have you got anything else as far as the responsibilities of players?
I already said you got the list. Ultimately, the responsibilities of players and TOs comes down to ensuring everyone has a good time and is respectful and courteous and treats everyone the way they want to be treated.
Yeah.
I don't think it needs to be rocket science. I think the fact that we're in a situation within particularly the 40K tournament community, and ironically, whether it's just because I'm in more 40K groups than anything else, I don't see it, or whether there's more 40K tournaments than anything else, I don't see a lot of this behavior in any other gaming group. It might be because 40K is the biggest. It might be because 40K is the most numerous in events. It might be, I don't know. But
see, I don't know. I'm in more diverse groups than you, I think, and probably because you play 40K, you post more in those groups, so you may see more of it. I'm certainly seeing a lot of those accusations of cheating and unsportsmanlike behavior happening in different game systems. But what I'm not seeing is the backlash from big events that we're seeing in the 40K world.
I don't know how many other events do hit the numbers of things like LVO or the London GT. Like 300 or 400.
And just to put out there, have we seen any backlash for the LVO? Did we see it? Oh,
LVO
okay,
had a bit of controversy at the end there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we saw it at the American Team Challenge, London GT.
Yeah.
There's now been a few of them that have felt that. I think even Adepticon had something happen towards the end of it.
Yeah, it did.
So, but is that because we've hit a point in the community where these events are drawing 300, 400, 500? I mean, LVO for 2019 sold out in 3 days at 512 players with a waiting list.
It's amazing, isn't it?
That's going to be, as far as I'm aware, the biggest singles 40K event in the world. It might even be one of the biggest single tabletop game tournaments ever. I know that there was a Blood Bowl event that was run in Nottingham a few years ago that was big. I don't know it ever hit 500 players, though. It might have been in the high, like, 300s or 400s. Mm-hmm. I don't know it ever tipped over the 500.
The problem, again, with LVO is they've got 500... Did you say 512 players?
512 players.
But how many of those turn up? Like, when you played, how many people didn't turn up?
Well, that's true. The field when I was there was 420, 430, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I think there was 390-something that finished.
Which is, that's 10% of the player pool aren't finishing. It's just a lot when you're playing with 400-something players to have them not turn up or not come back for day two. that's really high. And the reason that I say that is because what I think that is potentially happening is people are going, oh, it's going to sell out. I'll just get my ticket just in case.
Yeah. Oh, look.
When and it's only, you know, $100. If I don't go, then I don't go.
Well, when I was talking to Diffie about Terracon, which is held in Narracourt in South Australia, they had a hard cap of players on 96. And I think they ended up with 89 actually finishing the event.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him about it going, oh, look, I'd actually really like to go to Terracon maybe next year. It's a relatively cheap flight. I've got people willing to drive me out to Narracourt. I've got people who are willing to help me, you know, in terms of accommodation. It could be an okay trip. And he said, I'll just buy a ticket in the first day or two because they sell out every year. I said, well, yeah, I saw it sold out and they had a waiting list. He said, yeah, but most of those guys who don't, like, there's always a gap because they buy their ticket and then their lives change and they just go, oh, well.
Hmm.
So you're probably right in that regard.
Whereas ideally what we would like to see, and it comes back to what I was saying before around if you can't attend, let us know. Like for one of our events, yeah, we had to close it off and then I think four people didn't turn up, which is still only 5%, but still four people didn't turn up.
And we were turning people away.
We turned people away. We had 20 people on a waiting list for that event and four spots opened up, but they didn't let us know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think the... I think we're seeing it now as it reaches critical mass for 40K because of the
size and scope.
The popularity of it and the size of it. I don't think there's any tabletop gaming system in the world. X-Wing might have given it a run a couple of years ago when it was at its peak. I don't know that X-Wing is as big as 40K.
Certainly, and we're not seeing that in the WA community anyway.
No, and we don't see that at LVO. We don't see it at any of the other...
Yeah, but is there an X-Wing...
Yeah, there is.
Major? No, let me finish. Is there an X-Wing major event that we don't know about?
Look, there very well could be.
Because we don't know what we don't know.
No. And if there is a big international event for X-Wing, let us know. We'd love to find out more about it. But it feels to me, at least at the moment, like 40K is the first one to hit a point where LVO gives prizes, cash prizes, and we're at that tipping point now where it's almost like there's a percentage of the community that want to take 40K pro...
Yeah.
Like an esports style situation where we see prize money changing hands, where we see the level of competition increase, where we see judges at tables monitoring games and televised or Twitch streamed or whatever you want to call it.
Well, we are seeing that with some of the games for 40K, aren't we? Like
we're at a weird moment where the cash prizes there are a couple of thousand dollars at best.
Compared to how many million was it?
The next Dota 2 World Championships are looking at down the barrel of $25 million US dollars in the prize pool, which is twice what the US Golf Open has for an esport.
Yeah.
And it feels like we're encountering all these hurdles in a game, and like any of the sports that are competitive, golf, tennis, football, whatever you want to call them, are all games. And I wonder if those games were transitioning to a competitive sport in this day and age, would we start seeing the need for stricter rules and committees and referees and all that sort of stuff today?
We have those, though.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is if it was a game that had just come out now, so say, for example, tennis was a brand new thing, would we need to see this kind of development happen because the game had hit a point where it was going to become a competitive, like a sport rather than a game? Would they be going through a similar situation within their community because of social media, because of the connection that we have these days? Or did all that stuff take place at a time where the governing bodies got together, decided they were the governing bodies, set the rules up, and now 50 years, 80 years, 100 years, however many years on it is, do we accept those rulings and the level of behavior that's acceptable or not because that was all done when we hit that critical mass? And is 40K at that point where we're hitting that critical mass of turning it into a sport, like having a percentage of players of it at an elite level playing it as a sport, not a game? Does that make sense? Like, could that be why we're seeing what we're seeing now?
I think potentially, and I guess what we're hearing is, you know, we keep hearing, oh, well, this needs to be ruled by ITC and that kind of thing. So are we getting to that point?
The problem is, as well, is anyone who decides that they're going to be the governing body for any of these game systems outside of the owner of these game systems, because at the moment they are games.
Hmm.
Now, I'm sure that someone out there came up with tennis and came up with soccer and came up with, you know, all the other games, but those bodies now aren't necessarily the ones who own that game. So there is obviously precedent for bodies outside of the originator of the game to get involved. The difference is with tabletop is that no one else makes the models for those game systems, whether it's Infinity, whether it's Malifaux, whether it's 40K, they're only manufactured by the owner of the game. So it creates this really weird dynamic where unless the game's owner takes ownership and sets that up, no one else is going to have the same clout and the same accepted level of responsibility because it's not your game, it's someone else's. So is that contributing to it? And the fact that we are now seeing cash prizes, is that why we're now seeing less sportsmanship, less appropriate conduct and more bending of rules and things because there's money on the line as opposed to there being bragging rights and a cool trophy? Like there's always been box sets and that sort of stuff floating around, but is the fact that there is now cash prizes available in some of the bigger events, is that contributing to a change in the community's dynamic? And because you don't have to be an elite athlete to play, in theory, anyone can win, does that change the perception of things? And when you start looking at competitive poker and some of those sorts of things that happen where there are big cash prizes and it's a card game and it's a bluffing game and it's still a chance game as well, like all of these things start to crop up when we start talking about this.
Yeah. There's lots of things there.
Yeah. So I definitely feel like the community over the next 18 months to 2 years is probably going to have to, in some way, shape or form, start creating some sort of, you know, talking point or sort of not necessarily committee or governing body, but there certainly needs to start being some sort of consensus because at the moment we've got different parts of the world playing the game different ways. We've got different stores in the same suburb playing the game different ways. You know, you've got all this variation with no governing body to control it, and I guarantee there is no way that we're going to have one governing body like you would for
tennis.
My best example would be the World Cup that we've just seen played, where it doesn't matter which country you're from, everyone's playing the same game on the same pitch with the same rules. That's just never going to happen because there's no way that I could see one of the two major formats, the ETC and the ITC, I can't see one of those
middle
two
ground
coming out on top. Because the ETC has been going a lot longer than ITC. ITC is very popular in America and in other parts of the world to some degree, but I can't see it. I can't see that ever coming to a midpoint where everyone agrees. And the only way that's going to happen is if Games Workshop steps in for 40K at least and says, here's the format. Here's how we're going to manage it. Here's the competitive scene. And do like what some of the esports guys have done, where the developer of the game steps in and goes, we're going to create a league. We're going to create a circuit. We're going to put prize money on the line. We're going to turn it into a sport. And it just feels like 40K is at a place where you could do that, but the company in question, for whatever reason, and I'm not saying it's a wrong or a right reason, I'm just saying for whatever chosen reason they have, either haven't thought about it or don't want to do
it. I'm wondering if they're moving towards that. Like with Shadespire, they run the Shadespire Grand Clash, and that is very regulated.
Yeah, it is.
You know, this is the players pack, this is how the matchup process happens. But it's different in that it doesn't require terrain and it doesn't require, I mean, obviously it does require a board, but the board is supplied
by the players,
and that kind of thing. Whereas when you move to something like 40K, even the size board that you use can be different depending on the number of players or depending on the size of the game that you play. So does it then become really structured, and do you lose something by moving to that structured event? Like,
yeah.
I think we might have gone off on a tangent somewhat.
Yeah, probably.
I think that was your tangent. I'm giving you responsibility for that.
Well, it was to do with when you wind it all back, I'm sure it makes sense. I'm just going to go with that.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do that.
I'm sure when I check it in post with the editing, it'll make sense to me when I listen to it.
Let's hope so.
We're going to take a quick break and we're going to wrap up this episode. Right, so that's this episode done for another fortnight. I keep saying fortnight, but I'm acutely aware we have listeners in other parts of the world that still potentially don't know what that word means. So hopefully if we use it enough, they'll know.
Given that we keep saying a fortnight, that's 2 weeks. I reckon they've got it now. We can probably stop saying it.
We can probably stop saying, okay, I'll bear that in mind for next time. So yeah, that's some thoughts on rights and responsibilities over two episodes, both of TOs and players. There is plenty more on this topic that we could talk about at length, and I think that off the back of Frontline Gaming having recently started talking about their floor rules and us looking at revising what we will essentially have floor rules at events in our Bill of Rights, I think that any sort of event attendee should be under no illusions that the expectation of the community is increasing in regards to your behaviour and how you conduct yourselves in the room and how you treat other players and the event organisers as well. So I think it's important that, you know, not just for 40K, but for any tabletop organised event, that you consider your own behaviour and your own expectations and then make sure that the TOs hold up their end of the deal in regards to the same. It's, I think as we get brought further and further into the light, you know, as we've seen with esports, it's only going to get more important that players conduct themselves in a way that's reflective of the community and brings some positive exposure. So,
but that comes from TOs and the way that they conduct themselves and
absolutely.
The way that they organise events and what they bring to it as well. So I think we have a real responsibility as TOs and along with the other TOs that are out there in WA and in Australia and the
around
world
the
over
world. Yeah.
To really make sure that we are clear with what we are going to provide and the kind of events that we're going to run. And so the players know what that expectation is, what they can expect from us and what we expect in return.
Yeah. And you know, hopefully that means that there's less incidents of unsportsmanlike behaviour and conduct at some of the major events that we've seen around the world. And
maybe it'll mean less players pack being a paragraph on a Facebook page.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hate writing players packs because we do try and cover everything and we inevitably don't. But if I can't cover everything in 7 pages, it's...
Well, if you're not covering everything in 7 pages, then it's not getting everything covered in 7 lines.
No, exactly.
So I think that, as TOs, we're really trying to step up.
And we hope, based off what we've seen around the world, it feels like the all the big TOs and all the ones who want to see us grow as a community are doing the same. Mm. So we just encourage anyone out there who's running events to make sure that the players understand what you expect and, you know, make sure that you make it clear what you're going to provide the players so that no one walks away disappointed and upset. And it's a really complex issue. And I think, like I mentioned in either this episode or the last, we do seem to be at a tipping point. Mm. And the next couple of years are going to dictate.
That's so funny. I can't remember whether you talked about it in this episode, the last episode, or the Facebook live thing that we did a week ago.
Too much media.
But I do remember having a conversation about a tipping point and esports and tennis or... Golf, I can't remember.
Who knows? But look, we'll wrap up the episode here, guys. Thank you very much for listening. You can check us out every second Wednesday on Facebook Live and then every alternating Wednesday here at the podcast. So,
or Thursday or Friday, depending on
we've had one issue and that was illness. But other than that, we should go back to our regular Wednesday scheduling.
Yep, most definitely.
So we'll see you next Wednesday live or depending on where you are in the future. Figure out which week it is. We've also got show 2018 now about 9 weeks away. If you want to check that out, you can head to the website. There'll be links in the show notes for that as well. And if it's in the future, you can go and check out the events, pictures and everything on the website. So we'll see where
Let's
we get.
Let's hope you're rating it now. Yeah. Come along to show. It'll be great. It'll be awesome.
22nd to 24th of September 2018. So I hope to see you there. That's our next event. We've only got one more after that, which is another hurdle we'll cross.
Possibly two if we do the Age of Sigmar Masters.
Oh, that's true. Oh, God. We've got to get a venue for the first one yet.
True.
All right, guys. We'll
go and deal with that.
We'll go and deal with that. And
venue problems by ourselves. So you guys have a great day.
Yep. And we will hopefully catch you for the next episode. You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.